This is On Being's Unheard Cuts. I'm Krista Tippett. You're listening to my extended conversation with Wayne Curtis and Myrtle Thompson. They are co-founders of Feed'em Freedom Growers. I spoke with them on December 16th, 2011, in their home in Detroit, Michigan. This interview is included in our show, Becoming Detroit. Download the MP3 of the produced show at onbeing.org. So if things are... I mean, that's a dispossession.
How do I get out? Oh, there we go.
It's kind of confusing because you see the boarded up doors and then you see a toy out front.
Yep. Well, this could be someone living there too.
There could be.
The lock locked. Lock it. Lock?
I left my purse in there.
No, you should get your purse.
Okay,
nobody leaves purses. But big things they might steal, but purses are a real pain in the butt.
If they can make off with my 70-pound bag, they deserve it.
I won't. No, they don't deserve it. They don't deserve it. But okay, I hear the love, okay? Here, we're going to go in here. Hello.
Hi, everybody.
This is Wayne.
Hi, Wayne.
This is Krista.
Hi, Krista. This is my daughter's name.
Really? How do you spell it?
K-Y-R-I-S-T-I-A.
Oh, okay. I spell mine with a K, too. It's just the C-H, but mine K-R-I-S-T-A.
Yeah. Krista.
Yeah.
Tranquilus.
Tranquilus?
Trent.
Trent. Trent. Say it again.
T-R-E-N-T. Trent.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know much about finance.
I'm Chris.
Hi.
Pleasure to meet you.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Hey, Rob.
I'm Myrtle.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, that's Gloria.
What's up? Myrtle T.
Come on in, guys. Make yourself comfortable as possible in our small space.
Hi, I'm Myrtle. Hi, I'm Barbara. We didn't get a chance to meet at the last conversation.
Okay.
I'll sit out on the porch.
All right.
Yeah, I had the hat on at the last time I saw you.
Let's get some seats.
Okay.
How you doing?
Oh. Yeah. I found my rubber bag.
Nice, intimate, cozy space.
Yeah. Okay, we'll stop by and see it. I saw it as we were driving.
Yeah. Good. Hit the light behind you, Rich.
Okay.
You couldn't tell what it was on.
So, introduce. This is Krista Tippett from a wonderful radio show called On Being.
Yeah, that's right.
And this is Wayne Curtis, who has been smiling for the last 2.5 years because he and Myrtle just got married.
Oh.
and Myrtle.
Has she been smiling too?
She had reached the smiling stage before. And I just thought it would be what Krista interviewed Grace. Interviewed Grace extensively. The show is often about philosophy and On Being and spirituality and lots of thinking and interviews people all over the world who are asking similar questions that we've been asking and many questions we haven't yet asked. And thought that it would be wonderful for Krista to meet the two of you because Grace rarely gets into the specifics of what's happening in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it would be a good way for her to hear from you what you're doing.
She brought them up, though, didn't she?
She mentioned freedom, but
I kind of pushed because, you know, I would say, tell me where you see hope. And this is Chris Hegel. He's also on the show. And
can
Trent
you hear
Gillis.
Us?
Well, tell me what you do, how you came to be doing what you do.
And this is Travis.
That's my son.
You sit here, Travis.
What we do and how we came to do it. Through years of conversation with Wayne, there was always a level of my conscience being raised, and growing food. We had a lot of space, we had a need, and the two just went together, especially coming from his background of activism and building community. Looking around the city and knowing that there are a lot of disparities in the food security.
Tell me, when people use that phrase, I've heard that, food security. What do you mean by that?
Securing so that everybody has...
Knowing that there's going to be a next meal. Right?
Knowing that there's going to be a next meal, but what kind of meal? Food security is, folks can eat, they can go to the grocery store and buy pop, chips, candy, but is there food that is really nourishing? Do we have any say-so as to where our food comes from, how it gets to us, what's in the food? That everybody has the right to fresh, healthy, affordable food. Everybody. For me, it's not about just making sure a person has some canned goods in their house. For me, it's the knowledge and the historical context of growing food and food access and how it's dispersed. All those issues are very important to every human being, not just Wayne and Myrtle at Feed and Freedom Grow, but every human being. And I think that's one of the reasons why the food movement, good food movement, has really taken Detroit and other cities, other states so... by surprise, people have that common ground. We all have to eat. Yeah. And it just so happens with Wayne's long history in activism and organizing and love for self and community, it just took off for us. Because for me, I was thrust into a position of being a voice as I'm learning what it really means to grow food and become spiritually connected with the earth. So...
So you were—you've been an activist for a long time, but was food always part of that vision, or did that come along at some point?
Survival was part of that vision, and like what Myrtle was saying, food security, life security, human being security, and all the assets of learning how to be human and advancing that philosophical concept and then developing a strategy to do that, because you got two things going on here. You got us and you got them. And they have their philosophical concept and we have ours, but we're developing ours. Mm-hmm. So that's the aspects of food security, food sovereignty, decentralization of food, decentralization and control of education. I mean, all of the things that help people survive and advance their insights or their outlook on life.
Mm-hmm. So what happens, what do? You grow food here.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens to that food? How does that?
We started out as a community garden with limited growing experience except for growing food as a child with my grandmother. Wayne grew corn before. We would participate with the Garden Resource Program, and they offered being able to take some of the food to market to sell, and which worked perfectly for us because it allowed us to sustain our garden. The money that we make from the market, it goes right back into the garden. So part of the food would go to the neighborhood, part of the food would go to the pantry, part of the food we would have cooking demonstrations with the neighborhoods as to include a lot of, even I wasn't familiar with some of the things that we were growing, but it was just great to grow. Well, so we learned how to prepare those things through the help of a chef and to start to have conversations about why we need to eat better, why we need to eat more nutritionally rich and dense food. So part of the food would go to the cooking demonstrations, the neighborhood, the market, and personal use. We eat a lot of the food.
What do you grow?
Kale, two types of kale, three types of kale, collard greens, tomatoes, bell peppers, hot peppers, eggplant, squash, strawberries, raspberries, watermelon, onions, potatoes, herbs like cilantro, basil, parsley. We grow sunflowers. We grow... the squirrels grew some corn last season. Let's see. I'm missing something. Oh, okra.
Yeah.
Swiss chard, beets.
I grew up eating okra. I grew up in Oklahoma. Nobody eats okra in Minnesota except at the Indian restaurants. It's so good.
Okay.
Well, can I ask a question on that?
Sure. Because when we talk about all this food security, mm-hmm. that's one aspect. But then I'm thinking about all the stuff that you just listed off. Seems to me like, do you see connection to generations through recipes rather than just chefs? So when you talk about Swiss chard and all collard greens and all that, does that bring up old recipes that maybe were forgotten or ways of storytelling through elders with younger generations, things like that?
When you mention collard greens, we have folks are beginning to change the way they eat, but you get a lot of wonderful stories around the kitchen table and how grandma used to cook. And our folks from down south would come up with just the wonderful stories. Okra brings people from all over. Our eggplant brings people from Indian culture into the garden, and we get recipes. The young folks, they want to know if we can grow pizza, but we can grow the ingredients for pizza. Just so much different conversation. And a lot of folks who want to, once again, cook their own food participate in gardening and just trying to bring those young people into it. But most of the recipes haven't been forgotten. We got some folks holding on. And the chefs, they add another, because they're more flamboyant with the what they'll mix together and what they won't mix together. So we learn a lot. We learn a lot.
Is there a particular story that you remember from somebody that told you? For example, I was just, my mother-in-law's from this little Germans from Russia community, and we're just sitting around talking about sauerkraut, which launched her in a whole tradition about something that came up that linked, which she's Catholic, mm-hmm. into this Jewish culture through one term. It was all through sauerkraut. I was curious if you have something like
that.
Not to put you on the spot.
Yeah, you put me on the spot. Wayne, can you think of an impactful story that might that came about over a particular thing that was growing? Because the only thing I can think about is how many people talk about how through health issues they've decided that they want to change the way they eat. And so mm-hmm. fresh for them has been better. So maybe you can...
Watching the kids respond and our response when you see something grow. I didn't know that looked like that. you know, it's the first time I've seen a transplant for sweet potatoes. I never knew where okra came from, and here's the whole structure here. But if I can go back, one thing that I think we're going to have to pay more attention to is, I mean, what food sovereignty is or food security is. I mean, there are a bunch of particularities that go in developing the aspect of just growing food. And why? Because it's contradictory because of the environment that we live in now, like what Myrtle was talking about, Del Monte and Monsanto, IMF, they make this. I mean, it wasn't for them, maybe we would be already doing these things, but because of these actions and their ideology of, or their concept of structure of making money, we have to develop the conversation, how to grow food, what we're going to eat, the dialogue of just developing a human relationship so these things can happen, because they will not happen until this type of culture is developed. So along with growing food, we're growing culture, we're growing community, because we're growing structure, we're growing ideology, we're growing a lot of things to make sure that our existence is no longer threatened because of us being marginalized in a system that's killing us, and we ain't got no say-so in our existence or how we live as human beings. So developing consciousness, I think, is very important. It's just not a warm and fuzzy garden. You know, we're just not just growing food. We're growing a whole aspect of human relationships. And as we grow food, we're learning that the squirrels grow food, the sun grows the food, the microisms in the soil grow the food. And we're becoming part of this process of existence in the whole ecology system that exists not just in the garden, but has existed since probably the beginning of existence.
Right. You know, this is just making me think again of something I talked to Grace about, and it's come up with other people too over the years, is there's progress that comes about by something new, and there's progress that comes about by rediscovering things that human beings used to know forever and forgot. But what you're actually adding to that is, yes, in a way, you're rediscovering something that the first human beings learned, how to plant their own food, right? Mm-hmm. However many millions of years. But you're learning it, you're relearning it, rediscovering it with consciousness, with, as you say, with a culture, with structure, with an ideology. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the new part, is the awareness of it. Mm-hmm. And making a really conscious link between about what this means to being human.
We're developing a humanistic praxis that pertains to this reconnection to these things of life. And Erica Huggins says something about the oldness of new things fascinate me, like snow. So that's exactly what Grace was talking about. So we're rediscovering ourselves and redeveloping our identity. Our identity is no longer connected to Del Monte. I love this poem, One Day I Forgotten Name, Age, Sex, Religion, Address. I found myself. So we're creating this environment where we're getting rid of all of these lines of demarcation that defines me here and you there and you here. Y'all supposed to be secret, right? the birds here and the air there, there's an interconnection and relationship to all of these things. So we come up with new concepts and understandings, like it's selfish to consider others, you know, so let's be selfish and consider others, you know, instead of the individualistic thing that we talk about or practice. And all of these things cannot be brought to the table of this new community and new culture that we're realizing how to develop, but are eons, that's your favorite word, eons away from where we need to be in that rediscovery. In that process that we're going through. But because of the contradiction, we have to secure that process, and we have to deal with the contradictions of city policy, state policy, federal policy, global policy, in order to ensure that this process of development and healing can continue.
We grow all of that.
Right. We grow all those things in the garden. And I did think of something interesting about something that we grew. We grew sweet potatoes for the first time. Mm-hmm. And
that's why I mentioned
we have a supporter or a friend of the garden Reverend Burrell, he comes over and he checks on us from time to time. He always called himself a country boy, and he told us how to grow our collards big and strong. And so he saw the sweet potatoes, and we had a bucket of little tiny ones, and he took them. But he brought some back, and they were prepared. And they were prepared with coon. Me and Wayne don't eat a lot of meat, and the only time I can recall and eating coon is when I was a little girl, and my mother had this thing in a pan. And I was like, oh, what is that? It looks like the cat. And so... needless to say, I'm going to try some. I don't think Wayne tried any. But because our sweet potatoes was there, and out of respect of the preparation and, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. It looked tasty.
It was.
You're learning how to trap.
No. I mean, the first thing
that's a bad word here in the city. You don't eat coon in the no. That's the thing of the past.
That was the first thing I asked him. I said, Reverend, where'd you get this coon from? And I kind of checked the trees and counted all the coons that were up there. But he said he went up north and hunted for it.
Yeah.
But that's the culture of the city because of the old industrialization, the beginning to advance this new economic and political system. People from down south and from all over who were once involved in another type of culture came here. Yeah. But they came with all of those skills and all that information, which was actually no use in at Ford Motor Company on the assembly line. Yeah. But now we are creating a situation where people and generations can give us this information. And now we have an environment that we're creating. It's the best of times where we can create this environment where all of these old ideas that we're giving and institutionalized over thousands and thousands of years can be put into use here.
Like the collard green cook-offs and just wonderful things like that. Mm-hmm. The best urban chef programs that are going on. Just a lot of things that... food ties people together. It brings people into a commonality. We all share the sauerkraut. I mean, I've heard so many recipes down to kimchi. I mean, how good fermented food is for you. And just all these different things. Mm-hmm. And it builds bridges between people because of the deep-rooted traditions that come along with sitting down to grow and prepare and partake of a meal prepared with love and just a little bit of knowledge, because a lot of people are intimidated by the science of cooking. And so those folks who are good in the kitchen are held in high esteem because they can take a few things and make them taste like heaven. Yeah. You know, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are you seeing differently in the city now that you've started growing? You know, sometimes you go the same route to some certain coffee shop or a joint, and you never notice things around you. All of a sudden, you start doing something different, and you see something that's been there the whole time.
For me, it's been different plants that grew in the season that are edible. The spaces, the things, how many people are really growing food for their own personal use, or... just spaces that could be utilized on a community level. Just being more aware of how nature takes care of itself, and given a chance, if you leave it alone, it will rejuvenate and bring back, because there are so many things that are growing wild that we could actually survive off of if we had to, and that are valuable, that are being sold in stores like Whole Foods for zillions of dollars a pound. Right. They're growing wild in lots.
So what are you thinking about? What's an example of that?
The red clover flower. Those little red clovers that grow everywhere. Me and my grandkids were harvesting those this year. Burdock root all over the place. Yeah. Mint is everywhere. I mean, just so many different herbs and vegetation that is just sprouting. Fruit trees. When I was a young girl, this city was... everybody had fruit trees and grapevines. Those things are probably still growing in people's backyards. They just have been overlooked because we want to go and see the shiny, perfect red apple instead of the little one with the little ding on the side, maybe, that is just probably better for you. Mm-hmm. And so we overlook a lot of things in pursuit of this consumeristic way of life. I mean, we just abandon some things that were beneficial to our very survival. So those are just some of the things I noticed. And I also noticed when people put in their food baskets these days. So a lot of that.
It changes your culture. Because when you rediscover, like, what can be eaten that's been there all along.
Yeah.
And you drive your car over it, you mow it down, when you change your oil, you throw your oil on something that's very valuable. And that's the culture of neglecting this consumer or industrial premise of this present culture makes you negate or doesn't allow you to take a deep breath or look at the sun or enjoy life. And now, instead of throwing pallets all over something, someone will look up under the pallet and say, you know, you can eat that, you know. And so that changes your relationship with the earth, but it changes your relationship with another person. Because when they go to drive their car over it or spit on it or whatever they're going to do that's negative or disregarding this life, you have to find a way to explain it to them. Mm-hmm. Don't drive your car on that. We got to find some place to put the pallets or, you know.
Be more mindful.
Mindful. Mm-hmm. So, thanks, Myrtle. but that changes our relationship between ourselves. And these are the things of developing community, the very small things that we may not even pay attention to, but you have to pay attention to it. You can't negate that because it's part of our development.
You know, I'm just, I'm thinking, we need to move on, do we?
Yeah.
We were talking a bit in the car on the way over here about how this is kind of an untold story. Right, this Detroit that you're part of? Or there are a lot of people who think Detroit and they think, you know, what's everything that's failed in the economy we had. And just this week or last week, there's an article in the New Yorker magazine about this New Yorker journalist who goes to meet with one of the world's greatest chefs. I mean, he's in Belgium or something, I don't know, someplace way up north. And it's all about how he spends his days going out into the fields and finding 10 plants like that mm-hmm. that are just growing and then turning them into these incredibly expensive wow. meals. And the kid has a waiting list of 1,000. And you're doing the same thing
Yay.
On this everyday basis in this neighborhood in Detroit that if people don't know these stories, they might just, you know, they might define it in terms of the jobs that have been lost, right? Or mm-hmm. the properties that have been abandoned.
And this is the information age. So we're taking advantage yeah. of the technology. And so there can be some speed learning and some speed understanding and some speed realization because of the technology. And that's going to affect the practice on a much larger scale. Mm. Because the economy, it just didn't start failing. It's been failing. Probably since the beginning. But because of technology, because of information, people have been able to redefine that act of failure or disregard the leadership of developing another type of culture. It's very hard to do that now because of information, because of the internet, because of television. I heard on the radio that concept of TV may be changed, yeah. may be transformed into something else. Mm-hmm. So all of these medias, which have been used to redefine who we are to life, we're taking advantage of it to redefine and right. reinvent our concept of culture, work. And that's what this here is doing. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. You have a copy of We Are Not Ghosts here? It's a new film just coming out.
I couldn't put my hand on it right at this.
You don't know where it is? Okay.
It's there, but it's, we got a zillion, a zillion DVDs to go through.
So you know when you're talking about the, I'm not driving over, watching where you're driving over certain things, it makes me, reminds me of, can't remember who used to say this to me all the time, but a weed is a somebody else's flower. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
The dandelions, we have a beehive. The dandelions are the bees' first spring flower, and that is vital to their existence here in Michigan and in the city. And so in certain neighborhoods, we wouldn't be welcome because we let our dandelions do their things. And the bees welcome them. They make a really good honey out of that stuff. So
this is cultural transformation, because how is that going to affect the people that like putting poison on their dandelions to kill it? Once we start decentralizing a lot of assets, a lot of aspects to life, all these things gonna change or rediscover themselves. We may stop swapping flies and gnats and stuff like that, because we're gonna find that they're also part of the ecology system. I don't know about mosquitoes though, but they gonna get swapped. But there's no such thing as space, and everything, whether we know it or not, is interrelated and interconnected. We're just putting ourselves in a position to rediscover that. And how do we fit into this picture? We're escaping from the corporate zoo, I guess, so to speak. And we're freeing ourselves, you know, and we're becoming freed species, and we're joining the rest of the crew.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I like that corporate zoo.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, had you never done that before?
I never heard it either.
I thought maybe that was a line.
You guys tonight.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Y'all come back by, please.
Thank you so much.
And I like to have.
You know, I couldn't help. As I was watching you talk, I couldn't help notice this photo behind you, with the strawberries.
Yes.
Yeah. Great.
And this is part of symbolization. The symbolization of developing this new culture, mm-hmm. which is also needed. This is a symbol.
Right.
It organizes. Semiotics, so to speak, in a positive way. And all of these things we're taking control of and rediscovering. All these things can work for us, you know. So this is good. But I like to really, we're studying philosophy, so I like to stay in touch with you guys and have conversations.
Yeah, you know, did Trent already go up?
He went to get some cards.
Oh, he's getting cards, so he'll give you a card.
What time is he gonna be home?
Right here.
Today he'll be home about. He gets off at 4:30. You know, it takes about 2 hours to travel.
Okay.
Travis, does he have the Matrix?
Travel
ride a truck. I think Matrix. Him or Cicely does.